This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well. Sex, health and well-being in our LGBTI communities.
Presented by Joy sponsor VAC.
Welcome to another week of Well, Well, Well. I'm Cal and I'm joined in the studio with the lovely Michael.
Hi.
Hi. We've got a lot to cover.
Yeah, we're doing a bit of a double play this week.
We're taking two topics at once. And one of them is, of course, going to be PrEP. There's been a huge announcement from the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee that is positively recommending HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis, otherwise known as PrEP, to the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, or PBS. We're going to unpack all of those acronyms and why you should care about that issue later on in the show. And we're also going to be talking about an upcoming, it's happening.
It's heel.
The campaign is here. It's called Little Pricks. Which, you know, gets
wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, there you go. Talking around a range of vaccinations and ways that you can prevent Hep A, Hep B, HPV, and
meningococcal.
And there's like all of those have acronyms and letters and stuff along the way. And we're going to be talking to the Deputy Chief Health Officer, Brett Sutton, to unpack some of that. And also with a focus on hepatitis A, because you did a show not too long ago.
We did. We did some hepatitis realness, some HPV realness. So we'll unpack that a little bit broader and link back to some of those amazing resources. So free vaccinations and vaccinations available for gay, bisexual and queer men. It'll be very exciting.
Indeed, indeed. So as we mentioned, talking to Brett Sutton, and we're going to also be talking to the AFAO CEO, Daryl O'Donnell, about this announcement around PrEP and how that's going to be making waves across the country.
Well, let's get stuck into it.
Looking after the health and well-being of the LGBTI community. This is Well, Well, Well. Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well. I'm Cal and I'm joined by my co-host Michael, and we're now joined on the line by AFAO CEO Daryl O'Donnell. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us again on the show. How are you?
I'm terrific. It's a pleasure to be on.
Okay, well, look, we're going to cut right to the chase here. There's been a lot of news around PrEP going to be added to the PBS following a recommendation from PBAC. But for someone who has no idea what any of those acronyms mean, could you unpack that for us?
Sure can. Look, we've got some really, really terrific news, which is that in Australia, within a few months, we should expect to see people who are at high risk of HIV, people who are interested in accessing HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis or PrEP, will be able to do that through their regular doctor and be able to get a script for PrEP and walk next door to their chemist and pick that up from the chemist. So it means that we'll see an end to the state and territory trials, which have been in place now for a couple of years in most states and territories. And for many people, we might also see less personal importation books. People will have access to PrEP through the pharmaceutical benefits scheme.
Okay. And so just for anybody that may not have, you know, if you listen to the show regularly, we've probably kept you up to speed on PrEP along the way. But for anybody that's just kind of tuning in, this isn't the first time PrEP has been up for consideration on the PBS, is it?
No. We've been through this cycle a few times now. In fact, it goes back as early as July 2016. And of course, we've known about PrEP for much longer than that. The big research trials have been running globally since about 2011. But it took until July 2016 for there to be an application to the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee. That was put in by Gilead Sciences. They're the holder of the patent for the brand name drug Truvada. And they put forward an application at that time, and unfortunately that was rejected by the committee, and the committee considered that the application from Gilead just wasn't cost effective.
Okay.
So we had to then wait another year before further applications went in. This time in July 2017, Gilead again came back with an application, but they were joined by another company called Mylan, and they put in they're a generic manufacturer. And they also put in an application because the patent on Truvada had expired. So we then had two applications, and it was deferred in mid-2017. So the committee said, look, we're interested, we need to understand this a little bit further, and they deferred a decision. And so what's now happened is roll forward to December last year, and those two applications, plus a third application from another generic provider called Lupin Health, were considered by the committee, and it's the good news from that December 2017 meeting that we're now celebrating, which is a positive recommendation for PrEP to be listed on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme.
And I guess just for anybody that's listening to understand that, because they think, you know, PrEP is this great innovative tool, they've heard us talking about it, but for consideration on the PBS, it really, the application has to come from the manufacturer of the pill, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So there needs to be a sponsor. There needs to be someone who comes forward to that committee and says, we've got this drug. It does these things. It's registered for use in Australia by the Therapeutic Goods Administration. That means, you know, it's been proven to be safe and to be effective. And now what we're saying to you at the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee is we want this to be considered for subsidy.
Okay.
So what the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee is there to do is to look at that, not in terms of whether it works. We know it works. It's to look at whether or not it's cost effective, and so it's doing a job for taxpayers really, and for the government to say, yep, there's a whole range of things that you know might be helpful, might be interesting, but is it worth the money? And what the committee has now said is this is absolutely worth the money, and they've set a price at which they think that Australia can really benefit from having access to PrEP.
Fantastic. And just so to recap that, there were three applications that kind of went in this time around from Gilead, Mylan, and Lupin. And which ones have come through?
Well, potentially all of them. So
okay.
What the feedback's in fact done is to say that it's considered the three applications, and it said we are making a positive recommendation that this be approved at a particular price, and the price they've indicated is $2,500 per year, and that's the price that the government is willing to pay to have PrEP subsidised. And so what that means is that for those three applicants, those three sponsors, they need to now be having discussions with the government to indicate that they're happy to meet that price, and we're aware that's in place, so that some of the companies have actually have already been able to make that agreement, and there's further discussions ongoing. So it's definitely over the line now in terms of a positive recommendation.
How does this overall change the landscape for us?
Well, it is a really big deal because what it does is it actually gives us access to PrEP in the way that all of us are used to accessing our healthcare. So, you know, if you're accessing a hypertension drug, or if you're getting a vaccination, or if you've got something going on for you, you go to a doctor, you get a script, and you walk next door to the chemist. That's how we're used to accessing healthcare. So the PBS decision actually brings PrEP into the mainstream in that sense. It actually makes it much more routine, much easier for people to be able to access PrEP. And it does mean that most of the state and territory trials that are currently running will start to wind up over time, as people have PBS access.
I guess that's a great point as well. Let's do a bit of a whip around, if you will. So we'll start here in Victoria. Of course, we've talked about it many times before that we've got the PrepX trial in place. And I guess PrepX, of course, is going to be wrapping up soon. But there's been some news on that today, I believe.
Yeah, there has. So your Minister for Health, Jill Hennessy, has made an announcement on behalf of the Andrews government this morning around extra investment, $400,000 announced to extend the existing PrepX trial in Victoria through to the end of June, and that really is fantastic news because I think there's been a lot of anxiety about the Victorian trial in particular. That it was due to end at the end of March, and a concern that might be too soon for us to see PrEP listed on the PBS, and what would that mean for people in Victoria? Now there's confidence that people will be looked after through that transition process.
Okay, and how does that look in New South Wales?
So New South Wales has had a trial running for quite a period of time. I think when we go to all of the other states and territories, what we're going to see is that the arrangements actually start to vary for depending on where you live. Mm. And of course, that's been one of the problems with the state and territory trials. So it's been, you know, fantastic that most states and territories have really stepped up in terms of saying, you know, we need urgent, large-scale access to PrEP. We haven't got it through the Commonwealth process at this stage, so we're going to put in place these trial arrangements that give access to people who can benefit. But there are differences across jurisdictions, and some of the jurisdictions have come online later than others. In the Northern Territory, there still isn't a trial, so people in the Northern Territory are only able to personally import PrEP. So there is a lot of variation, and because different states and territories have come to different arrangements, either in terms of the supply of drug or with researchers, the trials tend to have different end dates, and they have different arrangements for transition. So if you are participating in a trial, whether it's in Victoria or elsewhere, I think, you know, in coming days and weeks, you will hear from or be able to talk to your GP about what's happening for your trial and get updated about what the PBS recommendation might mean for you individually.
Now, for different states and running their own clinical trials, you said there's a lot of difference in terms of when those states are going to be ending, what their capacity is. There's also a lot of difference state by state and territory by territory relating to price as well. So some participants on different clinical studies may or may not be paying for their medication. They may be paying a lower price than what the subsidy is now. So how will the PBS subsidy, when people transition onto that, how will that work and will it affect everyone equally?
Yeah, no, it definitely won't be equal because, as you say, depending on where you live, you may either be participating in a trial without cost. You might be provided with access to PrEP through the study without having to make any payment. And in other places, a co-payment or sort of an equivalent to what you'd normally pay if you were going to the chemist for a script, an equivalent is in place. But sometimes that might be for a month's supply of PrEP, might cost you a co-payment. Sometimes 3 months' supply might cost you a co-payment. So it's going to look a bit different for people around the country, what they're currently paying and what they will pay under the PBS.
So when you talk about that co-payment, what exactly does that co-payment look like when I walk down to my chemist and want to pick up my PrEP with my prescription?
So the way in which the PBAC recommendation's been made is that when PrEP is listed on the PBS, people will be charged the same to access PrEP as they do for other medication. And this does vary, but for most people, for most general patients, they'll be charged $39.50 for a 30-day supply of PrEP. So for each month, they'll have to present with their script, and they'll be charged $39.50. For concession card holders, it's $6.40. And then for some others in the community, including Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, there might be different arrangements again. But the amount you would pay would be the amount you pay for any other script that you get from your doctor.
This is Well, 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 presented by Joy sponsor VAC on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well. I'm Cal, and I'm joined by Michael, and we're continuing the conversation with Afeo CEO, Daryl O'Donnell. So, Daryl, before we were talking about the subsidy and the trials and that transition period there, and I guess we want to focus on a few of the challenges, but thinking about that first, the price structure, is there a challenge in that if some people were not paying anything before to access the drug, and now there's the standard subsidy, do we run the risk of some people potentially falling off of using PrEP as a HIV prevention strategy?
Yeah, I think this is a something we need to keep a really close watch on and be concerned about. But I think the starting point, though, is, you know, most gay men and who are enrolled in the trials, one of the things that's been so amazing about the sort of PrEP journey for our community over the last, 5 years or so is just seeing how incredibly motivated and mobilised people are to look after themselves and their partners. And so people have gone to incredible lengths to actually get access to PrEP, to find out about it, to adopt it and to champion it. So I think for many of us, people will be quite happy to pay that PBS co-payment. But there has been a lot of chatter, and rightly so, about, okay, but what about people who can't afford this? And so there are some alternatives. For some people, personal importation might be an option. There are it's certainly possible to personally import PrEP generic versions from overseas at a rate which is going to be, you know, somewhat cheaper than the PBS rate. Some people are already doing that, and some people may continue to do that. And there are also some subsidised arrangements through those importation schemes through PrEP Access Now, for instance. But more generally, we do have to worry about this. There's another group of people in our community who will be, you know, really good candidates, who might already be participating in trials for PrEP, but who actually don't have access to Medicare.
Ah, okay.
So So not everyone in the community has access to Medicare, and that includes, for instance, you know, a lot of international students who are in Australia and might be actually, you know, contributing to the tax system in other ways, but actually don't have eligibility for Medicare, and we understand that there's at least a couple of hundred people in that situation. And then there'll be low-income earners who you know, in a sustained way might have trouble meeting these costs. And we really do need to understand what this looks like and to be working to address this. And I know you had Catherine King on Joy on Saturday, and yep. she's indicated she's aware of this issue, and we'll certainly be talking to her about this, and we're also talking to the government about this as well. So it is something that you know has been heard, and you know we're absolutely concerned about. But for most people, this is fantastic news, and they're yep. either going to be able to get PrEP at the concession price or the general price in the way that we get our other medications.
And with that, with how we get PrEP, so to speak, how simple is that access going to be? I mean, we've talked about it from a financial perspective, but what's that process, I guess, going to look like? Because obviously we're not joining on a trial and going to a specifically approved GP. Will people basically be able to approach their regular general practitioner?
Well, that's it, and that's part of what's great about the announcement. It's not only that we got the recommendation for PrEP, but it's the right recommendation. It means that you will be able to go to any GP in the community, any general practitioner, and ask about PrEP, and that GP will be authorised to write you a script if you're a good candidate, and then you'll be able to walk into any community pharmacy and access PrEP. So those are fantastic things. They mean that we're going to have PrEP available at scale. And the really important part of that is that although the trials have been absolutely fantastic, they're still only enrolling about half of all of those who we think we can benefit in our communities
yep.
from PrEP. So we need it to be much more available. But there's a bit of a journey to get there. That means, you know, we've got to make sure that our GPs across the community, our pharmacists, even pathologists, people working in labs that are doing HIV and sexual health testing, all of our clinical workforces need to be supported to be able to navigate the transition and give, you know, good quality healthcare.
Well, I suppose that's an excellent point, because PrEP, while we talk about it being a pill, it's really part of a program. And I guess the ASHRM guidelines at the moment recommend that the prescription is given for up to 3 months on, I suppose, a condition that you are also testing for STIs every 3 months. And they're looking at a couple of other, kidney function as well along the way. So you bring up an excellent point around the fact that there's going to be this increased amount of testing, which for someone who's sexually active is great. We know that quarterly testing is a really ideal time, but that has implications, I suppose, on other services along the way.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. It's a great thing that we can walk into to any doctor and any chemist. But there's some steps to get there, and you are right. This PrEP is not something that we consider in isolation. So for a GP, there's a range of baseline things they will do if someone comes in and asks for access to PrEP in terms of testing for not only HIV but for STIs and other bloodborne viruses. And there's a range of monitoring that has to happen on either a 3-monthly or a 6-monthly basis. And that includes sexual health checkups every 3 months. So the way in which the PBAC recommendation is framed means that people will be able to get a script for 1 month's supply with 2 repeats.
Okay.
So that gives a maximum of 3 months, and that will then send them back to their doctor for a new script, and that allows for sexual health testing. But all of this actually means that our GPs and our pharmacists have got to be, you know, really well armed to be
yeah.
able to support us. And I think there's a bit of an opportunity here, because, you know, as gay men, we should be able to see any GP. We should be able to walk in and have expectations that we'll receive high quality healthcare. And so we need to make sure that our GPs know what the issues are for our community, not just in terms of sexual health, but in terms of all of the things that our community experiences and can support us properly.
Just touching on that issue about GPs knowing our story and being able to support us, if we're obviously going to need so many more GPs to be upskilled on how to prescribe PrEP, how if I was a GP and I wanted to better take care of my LGBTI clients and anyone at risk of HIV that wants to start PrEP, where can I go to sort of find out more, I guess?
Well, the first place would be to the ASHRM website, to the Australasian Society for HIV and Sexual Health and Viral Hepatitis Medicine. And many GPs in the community will know about ASHRM, particularly those that are working more directly in the HIV field. And ASHRM has already got a range of supports on its website. But also, more broadly, we'd be hoping that the RACGP, the Royal Australasian College of General Practitioners, and other clinical workforce groups will actually be doing the work to actually support their members to get the messages out. And there's a role for the Commonwealth here as well, that, you know, this is a big announcement and a big rollout, a big implementation process. And one of the conversations we've been having with the Commonwealth is not only with our clinical workforces, but also with community workforces, and then also with our communities and other communities that can benefit. There needs to be a range of implementation supports that go with this announcement so that everyone's getting the right messages about what's happening and how they can access it, and that can all run very smoothly.
And I guess thinking on the national strategy level here, where does PrEP figure in? Because I guess this isn't all the only solution we're going forward with. How is the discussion there going about the national strategy and PrEP's role?
Yeah, well, in fact, the timing's really good because, as we speak, the 8th National HIV Strategy is actually, you know, just nearing its final stages of development, and we're hopeful that by around the middle of this year, the Commonwealth Health Minister, together with all of the state and territory health ministers, will be able to sign off on a new national strategy. And PrEP is a big part of this. I don't think, that strategy sets an enormous goal to virtually eliminate HIV transmission in Australia by 2020. And I think, I think it's very hard to see that we could achieve that goal by that time frame now. But it's a great goal to aim for. And we won't get there without PrEP. But PrEP isn't all of the answer. PrEP has got to be delivered and delivered well, but as part of a much, much larger package of activities if we're going to drive down HIV. And, of course, the other thing we need to be concerned about is STIs. They're an issue that hasn't gone away, and we're seeing increases in STIs, not just in our own communities, but across the community. And we need to keep an eye on those as well, and we hope that the regular sexual health testing that's occurring with PrEP will help us to manage rates of STIs and certainly to detect them nice and early and get them treated.
Yeah, an excellent point, thinking about the broader strategy and how PrEP fits in. If people want more info on PrEP, has AFAO got any resources handy for them?
We do. There's a fact sheet on our website that really steps people through what the decision from the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee means and what they can expect from here. And every AIDS council, including the Victorian AIDS Council, but every AIDS council around the country will have information on their websites for members of our community about what the decision means.
Fantastic. Look, and Daryl, one final question. So we've got this recommendation from PBAC to list it on the PBS. The next step is the government has to actually approve it. Is that correct?
That's right. We're almost there. We're not quite there.
And when do we think that might happen? Any idea?
Well, we're hopeful it's going to be very soon.
Okay,
so
great.
Certainly from our perspective, we're working really closely with the government to aim for an early as possible listing date.
Okay.
Minister for Health has been absolutely unambiguous that he wants to see this listed quickly, that it will be listed. It's just a case of getting that listing date set, and we're hoping to see that set for 1 April. If not 1 April, then we wouldn't want to see it go beyond 1 May.
Terrific.
But that's an announcement from the government that we hope to see in probably during the course of February or perhaps early March.
Terrific. AFAO CEO Daryl Donna, thank you for your time and joining us here on Well, Well, Well.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. I'm Cal. I'm joined with my co-host, Michael, and we're now joined in studio by Deputy Health Officer for the Department of Health and Human Services here in Victoria, Brett Sutton. How are you?
I'm very well.
Thank you for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
So we're going to get right into it, but I think, I was talking to you before the show that I think a lot of people hear the word hepatitis. We hear, stories about hep A, hep B, hep C, but break it down. What exactly is hepatitis?
So hepatitis just means inflammation of the liver.
Okay.
The reality is it's caused by lots of different things.
Right.
It can be caused by toxins, but most people are aware of the causes of hepatitis that are viruses.
Sure.
They're very imaginatively named A, B, C, D, E, but the ones that we should really dig down to are hep A, which is a gut virus. Hep B and C are bloodborne viruses and are transmitted in different ways. But Hep A is, the focus of our immunisation campaign, and it's the one that's passed on really by microscopic bits of faeces that can be passed on either through food preparation or direct contact with the body.
Okay, a delightful thought for anybody having dinner as they listen to the show. There you go. But I guess you did mention the campaign, and why is there a focus currently around immunisation and Hep A?
Basically, we've got the emergence of an epidemic of Hep A in Melbourne. You could call it a cluster or an epidemic. I like to say epidemic. It gets people's attention.
Yep.
And actually, we've had an upsurge in cases that are locally transmitted.
Okay.
There's been a big outbreak in Southern Europe. Thousands and thousands of cases, also largely focused on men who have sex with men, but with other populations also affected because of the big numbers and the fact that it's transmissible. There's also been a significant outbreak in California, mostly related to injecting drug use. The cases that we've had in Victoria now number 37, with another 10 under investigation. That doesn't sound like a great deal compared to the thousands in Europe, but it's been doubling every month.
Yeah.
And we need to get on top of it before it becomes a widespread outbreak.
Sure.
And vaccination is the key thing to prevent it. Getting vaccinated with hepatitis A vaccine, which we've made free for all of this year for men who have sex with men and people who inject drugs or have done so in the last 12 months,
and we'll
to get on top of it.
And we'll unpack that vaccine and that access to that a little bit further on here. But who is at risk? You mentioned in Europe and Southern California, you did mention men who have sex with men. Who's at risk here in Victoria?
Essentially, it is men who have sex with men. That's where we've seen transmission occur. But those who are in close contact, including household contacts, and potentially, people who have food prepared by those who are unwell. There's also a risk in people who inject drugs. Some of the cases that we've had of our 37 haven't given a history of sex with men, but they've given a history of injecting drug use, and it can be transmitted that way as well. So we certainly want to include that group as an at-risk group. The general recommendations for the vaccine include people travelling overseas to developing countries, and those who are at risk by virtue of their occupation. So sewage workers would get routinely immunised.
Right.
So you've talked a little bit about immunisation to prevent Hep A. What are some of the other mechanisms we have to prevent Hep A transmission?
Obviously, anyone who's unwell who might have symptoms compatible with hepatitis A, and that's nausea, vomiting, abdominal discomfort, and then jaundice, which is eyes and skin becoming yellow, and the urine becomes a very dark brown. If those symptoms are emerging, then you have to think about the possibility of hepatitis A, and you should go to your GP and get tested. In those circumstances, then you should make sure that you're not in close contact with people. So not have sex until you're no longer infectious, and not prepare food for others again until you're not infectious, which is a week or so after the jaundice has kicked in.
Okay. And we've been talking specifically around Victoria, and while you probably won't be able to speak to numbers in other states, is this the only part of Australia that currently being affected by an increase in Hep A numbers?
No, it actually started in New South Wales.
Okay.
Probably a different importation from people who'd travelled to Europe.
Yep.
And they had a relatively small cluster compared to Victoria, and it seems to be they've gotten over the hump.
Okay.
And so it may be that, New South Wales remains at risk as long as people travel internationally.
Sure.
And there have been a few cases in South Australia as well. But really, the whole of Australia is at risk in terms of people who aren't immune to hepatitis A who might travel to areas where it exists.
Yep.
I know that South Australia has introduced vaccine, and New South Wales has been giving vaccine for some time.
All right. Well, look, that's definitely a consideration, considering we're in the middle of festival season with midsummer, Mardi Gras, and a lot of interstate travel. Definitely a consideration for a lot of people out there, specifically men who have sex with men, indeed, from the sound of it.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
So we were talking about the vaccine before for Hep A, and the vaccine, is it currently free?
It's been made free for the whole of 2018, so it's available now and for free. It should be available, obviously, in sexual health centres and so-called high caseload clinics, so the Paran Markets and Green Rooms of Melbourne to access. But GPs should be able to order it
from
the department. So it may not be routinely in their stock.
Sure.
So it might be an idea that if you normally see your GP locally, then to give a call ahead and say, look, I'm thinking about getting hepatitis A vaccine. Can you please make sure that it's in stock for when I make my appointment and the GP can make that order?
What are the qualifications for accessing the vaccine for free?
So just to be a self-identifying man who has sex with men.
Sure.
Or a person who injects drugs, man or woman, in the previous 12 months.
Okay. And then if you kind of are happy to discuss that, then they are happy to give that vaccine.
Absolutely.
Yep,
yeah.
No worries. And now with the Hep A vaccine, is it one shot? Is it a series? Is it... Yeah.
So one shot gives some protection. Mm-hmm. The recommendation and the free vaccine that's covered is for two doses because two doses gives lifetime protection, which is, you know, a good thing regardless. So we want as many people as possible to get the two doses and to have lifetime protection, which will protect you traveling internationally and will protect you for the rest of your life.
Are those delivered in separate sessions or the single session?
In separate sessions.
Okay. Time apart?
I think there's a month between them, a minimum of 4 weeks to deliver, but the GP will know the nitty-gritty of the vaccination schedule for those.
So you did say previously, you know, with consideration for somebody, let's just say hypothetically speaking, is a Melbourne-based man who's having sex with other men and he is traveling up to Sydney for Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
If he gets the initial vaccine, he'll have some protection kicking in, even if, let's say, you know, the timing of it, he actually won't get the vaccine or the second injection until after.
Yeah, that's right. There'll be, you know, relatively long-term protection, but for lifetime protection, the two doses is the recommendation.
Fantastic. And now, would a lot of people have already received this vaccine before?
Not necessarily. It's a recommended travel vaccine, but, you know, a lot of people won't see a travel vaccination centre or their GP before travel, especially if they go to a familiar place. But hepatitis A is in most countries of the world, endemically, as in, you know, circulates all the time. So it's a good idea to get it. And people largely haven't, unless they've, you know, been directed as a particular at-risk population.
So when I was a bit younger, you know, in my younger days, I'm not sure, when I started traveling, because obviously I was born in the States and I did some traveling overseas before I migrated officially to Australia, I kind of remembered getting various vaccinations, but I couldn't actually remember whether or not I had ever had a Hep A vaccine before. Is there a way to test for that, to talk to your GP?
Yeah, look, there are two options. You could test, and if you're happy to wait for the test result and see if you're immune and then you don't need it, fine and well.
Yep.
There's no harm in getting the vaccine if you happen to have received it many years before and you haven't got documentation.
Okay.
Then you can be assured that you've got lifetime protection.
Fantastic. Very good.
And if you were vaccinated here in Australia and you couldn't remember, say, I can't remember all the vaccinations I had as a kid, is that available in my public health record also?
It may be. So the Australian Immunisation Record has records for childhood immunisations, but for people of your age and mine, it probably doesn't contain them all. So you might have to dig down to, you know, your GP record or your My Health record if it's linked to all the GPs that you've seen in the past.
And speaking of that, talking about other vaccinations as part of your portfolio, the campaign that has been launched around this is part of a broader suite of vaccinations as well. Are you happy to talk about what some of those other ones are?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, largely this was kicked off with a meningococcal C cluster in Melbourne, 8 cases. But the reason why we needed to respond is because they would have increased if there hadn't been a vaccination response. And meningococcal disease is a really significant illness.
Yep.
20% of people will be left with disability. 10% of people die. Everyone gets hospitalized. It comes on really quickly and it's a very serious illness.
It sounds quite aggressive.
It's very aggressive and people can die within 24 hours from first symptoms. So, you know, vaccination is that assurance that you don't have to work out whether you're sick with meningococcal disease. If you've got a headache or sensitivity to light, nausea and fever, you can be happy that you're covered for those meningococcal strains. But the 8 cases, we haven't had any more for a couple of months. We're happy that the vaccine might already be showing early signs of working at a population level in terms of preventing transmission. But the vaccine that's being on offer protects against A, C, W and Y strains of meningococcal.
Sure.
So, you know, meningococcal W has also been an issue in Victoria recently.
Okay.
So it's good protection, especially for meningococcal C, which has been in the MSM community, but meningococcal Y, which has been a problem in Australia as well.
Okay. And that vaccine is also available for men who are having sex with other men?
That's right. And it's also available for the whole of 2018 and through the same channels. So through sexual health centres and through GPs.
Is the meningococcal vaccine available the whole year, or is it just until the end of June?
It's been extended.
It has been extended. Well, that's exciting.
For the consistency of messaging, that we can say, look, here are all the funded vaccines. They're going to be available right through 2018.
Okay. Get all the vaccines.
Get all the vaccine. And on that, if I was interested in getting both the Hep A and meningococcal vaccine, perchance at the same time, can I do that, or do I need to wait?
You can do that, yeah. You've got two shoulders, so two vaccines. The Hep A, again, we'd recommend a further dose. For the meningococcal vaccine, just one dose is enough for protection.
And there are two other, I believe, in part of the immunization campaign that's being put out there, is hepatitis B, is that right?
That's right. Look, that's a routine recommendation for gay and bisexual men. GPs should, that's one vaccine they should have in stock routinely, because it's part of the childhood immunization program. That's three dose. You should actually get tested to see if you've been exposed and are immune to hepatitis B. Mm-hmm. Or if you, in fact, you've got a chronic hepatitis B infection, which can happen, because in those circumstances, you don't need the vaccine, but you might need monitoring or treatment if you've got active hepatitis B.
Sure.
The other vaccine that's been made freely available just this year, again to the end of the year, is human papillomavirus vaccine. So HPV vaccine is given to young adolescent kids in school, but there'll be some men who haven't had it through the school program, of course. So that's available for men up to the age of 26. The reason for getting HPV vaccine is it protects against genital warts, and it protects against cancers that are associated with HPV, which include head and neck cancers and anal cancer. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason for the program for boys in school and for girls, protection against cervical cancer.
Well, look, it sounds like there's, a host of things that people could be doing about. And I think the takeaway, if nothing else, is that have that conversation with your GP, know what you've been vaccinated for, and potentially get vaccinated for the things that you're not covered for.
That's right. It's certainly not scaremongering, but it's saying, look, here's an opportunity to be aware of some of the risks with vaccine-preventable diseases, and a vaccine is a very easy way to protect yourself, and we're making it as available as we can with as minimal barriers as possible financially so that it can be taken up.
With the others, is there any difference in cost or accessibility with regard to... You mentioned the age difference with HPV, that it's under 26.
That's right.
If you were outside of any of those brackets, whether men who have sex with men or over the age 26, is the cost vary quite a bit?
Look, the hepatitis A vaccine, I think, is $30 to $40 for someone who's getting it as a travel vaccine.
Sure.
The HPV vaccine is only available in the school program and for this one-year funded program for MSM.
Okay. All right. And what should someone do if they're concerned that they have already acquired Hep A or any of the viruses mentioned for that part?
So for Hep A, as I said, if you've got the symptoms, you really just need to see a doctor and get tested. Be happy either that it's not Hep A or if it is to get the right advice. That gets notified to the department. We chase up close contacts of someone who's a confirmed case of hepatitis A, and we give them the vaccine in a window to prevent them getting hepatitis A by virtue of being a close contact.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it, I think, we have for you today. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
Deputy Health Officer Brett Sutton from the Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you for talking about the campaign, and hopefully we hear all those numbers plateau.
Well,
cease.
Yeah, hitting zero. That would make my day.
Hitting zero. Well, that sounds excellent. Thanks again for joining us here on Joy 94.9.
Thank you both.
For sexual health, mental health, and your overall well-being, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Well, that has been another episode of Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. A big thank you to both of our guests, Deputy Chief Health Officer Brett Sutton, as well as AFEO CEO Daryl O'Donnell, as we unpacked hepatitis A, vaccinations, and of course the big changes around PrEP. We mentioned a lot of resources.
We were very chatty Cathys.
we were just finding all the resources, treasure trove of information. When we were talking about the Little Pricks campaign and hepatitis A, that campaign does point you towards betterhealth.vic.gov.au/time-to-immunize. Did you get that? If you didn't, don't worry. We're going to put it on our website, joy.org.au/well. This and all the other resources. What are some of the others, Michael?
Well, we, as you said, we talked to Daryl from AFEO, so the Australian Federation of AIDS Organizations, who have some wonderful resources regarding the PrEP PBS recommendation. You can find that on their website, afao.org.au. And for clinical side of things, head to the Australasian Society for HIV HIV and viral hepatitis medicines, which is ASHM or ASHM. org.au. And for some more clinical resources for GPs specifically, head to the Royal Australian College for General Practitioners or racgp.org.au. And if you want some more general PrEP info, you're looking to access PrEP yourself, you're not exactly sure what it all means, head to vac.org.au/PrEP or head to PrEP Access Now, which is pan.org.au, or also, preppedforchange.com, all one word. All fantastic resources in which to access PrEP-related info.
And if you are driving in the car or you're in the kitchen and you're like, why do none of these pens work? That's okay.
I know the pen in my car never works.
And you're always like scrambling for it. It's, you know, you're running. It's like a cat.
Don't type things into your phone while you're driving. Don't write them down while you're driving. Pay attention to the road.
Here's all you need to remember. joy.org.au/well. We'll have a list of all those resources. And that's true if you've missed any part of this episode as well. So you can always listen to this episode and previous episodes, as well as you can head to iTunes where you can download and stream well to your heart's content.
Woo. Over 600 hours of wonderful well content available up on joy.org.au/well. I think we're done, Cal. This is it for the end of the
done.
Day.
Tune in next week, 8 p.m. on Mondays here on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.